Blog Talk Radio.
Keep doing your thing, because you never know. I might be sitting at home with a chicken bone, see y'all on TV. Now, wait a minute. I know them, you know. They should have been singing the whole time live.
Exactly, man.
I got 10 engagements. If I go to one event, I got like 5-6 people, you know, booking me. Blam, blam, blam. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm independent. And I am doing, I'm independent. And I'm like, wow, I'm doing it like on a big scale. Like I'm a real artist. I'm like, what? But hey, I spoke.
You are
it.
A real artist. You
I am a real artist.
Was written, and you know what? You know what, cuz? I'm so appreciative. You zeroed in right where I really want the reader to get. That's really the reason why I wrote the book.
I'm blown away.
I told God I would be faithful about the spirit that he gave me, and he wouldn't let me release it for some time, but if no one else gets anything out of that book, get chapter 9.
That's very, very simple. You know, I talk nice to them. They call me Daddy, AK Disco.
Hey.
AK Disco. 3-5. And I say, sure, I don't do no physical harm to them.
Mm-hmm.
I just threaten to take the food, the clothes, and the home from them. And they act right.
Okay. I was just thinking maybe you might have to clean house or something like that, but that's great.
Well, back in the old days when I first started, I used to use the duct tape and the clothes hangers and all.
See, I thought that, because that's an old tried and proven practice.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard.
It's a national anthem. I make them all say before I put them on the street. They say, "We are K-Tickle Girl, the one you heard about. We fight with knives and 45s and broken bottles, too. We are K-Tickle Girl, so who the hell are you?"
Oh, mercy.
Who the hell are you?
Okay, I was just about to ask you that. Like, what genre would you say most of your music, is in? I don't want to put you in a box or anything, but what do you feel it most represents, your style of music?
Well, Ron L., who's one of my partners, and we formulate the Love Brothers. We've just finished our 4th CD as well. He lives in Virginia. He said it's a combination of jazz and hip-hop, which he calls jip-jop, which I registered and copyrighted right away.
No, other than the fact that, you know, like you said, I was sitting there, there was times when I was sitting beside him while he was doing his beats and everything, and, I don't want to call him his real name. Taz has come a long way, and his music
is... Thank you, Jesus.
This is the voice, and as I said before, T-A-Z, host the show, man.
Good evening, this is T-A-Z, another T-A-Z Productions on Blog Talk Radio, doing a different thing tonight because normally I interview artists, music artists mainly. I have interviewed people that wrote books as well, and on the line, hopefully I got on the line, area code 678, introduce yourself.
TAZ, how you doing this evening, man? This is Mitchell Taylor talking to you.
What's up, dog? Hey man, it's been a long time.
It's been a long time, brother. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I ain't seen you in over about 2 years, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, at least 2 years. Yes, sir.
How you been, man? How you been?
Hey, man. I'm blessed and highly motivated, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, Mitch, I was reading your book, which is titled What's Up? A Definite Guide to Surviving Life in Black America. And the first question, because, bro, you put out all kind of information in this, I felt like I was in school. I'm like, this could be a college book right here. You know what I'm saying?
It really is full of information.
Yeah, full of information. What made you write this book and the title?
Well, what made me write the book is all of the different problems that Black America is facing. And not only do I want to talk about the problems that Black America is facing, but I don't think you could discuss problems without discussing solutions. So it's a problem, plan, solution type of book. And I chose the title What's Up because that's a term that Black people usually use to read each other with. And it's really a question, you know. It's really a question. We generally greet ourselves with a question, what's up, as if to say, you know, we're not sure what's up or we're not sure what's going on, but the title of the book suggests just that what is up indeed. And what's up is we're dealing with so many different problems, from economics to politics to education, the destruction of the Black family, Black male and female relationships, and Black leadership, just to name a few, I thought it was good to bring all those to light, and also to bring the solutions that will help Black America specifically deal with these problems.
Now, man, after reading the book and knowing you, I'm like, I'm going to paint a picture for y'all audience. Mitch comes to work dressed like he getting ready to give a speech every day. Dude, where you going, dude? Ain't you at
you
work?
Know.
You come in clean to death, and he getting ready to work? Right. So, and we all worked at a post office, and he was
right.
one of the clerks, and he be dressed right. Laid out. Stacy Adams all over. I'm like, what? So when I read the book, I was going to myself, this cat definitely, hey man, you might need to run for some kind of office, for real. Now, I'm not saying it, funny, I'm saying it seriously, like, yo, you really need to be in the leadership with a voice, so the stuff you wrote about in this book, some of these changes could come to pass. For real,
right,
for the area
right.
wherever you're at. And I mean, you know,
right.
you're taking on the national level, a book tour, a lecturing tour. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
make a good point.
Yeah.
We
yeah,
actually in the process
what?
Of doing some of that stuff right now. So that's kind of prophetic.
Okay.
You kind of prophetic because some of that stuff is actually taking place right now. The book tours
okay, cool.
and getting
yeah.
into different areas and places where I can meet and greet people and talk to them one-on-one and
right.
get their feedback. Because, you know, I don't have all the answers. It's going to take a dialogue. It's going to take feedback from the entire Black America, different aspects, different conversations with many people. So
yeah,
that's going to really
all
help.
Around, and all around the
that's
country
exactly.
'cause there's different
right.
problems in every
right.
part of the country. I mean, there's
right.
you solutionized a lot of different stuff together where
right.
everybody can relate to it and say, yeah, I've
right.
been down that road.
Exactly.
Especially on this one, you say, we will continue to struggle until we come together. Can
exactly.
you explain what you mean by come together? I kind of
well,
know, but I just want to know how you
right.
felt about the come together.
Well, it's all, you know, it's all about Black unity, but, you know, coming together, cooperating, working with each other instead of working against each other. Typically, you know, for far too long, the black ideology has been, you know, I'm struggling here in America, in this society. I'm going to get mine, and everybody else, you know, you get yours. And that mentality is not going to work, especially dealing with white society. For black America to be successful as a whole, yeah, you may be successful individually, but as a whole, as a race, that mentality is not going to work. We're going to have to learn how to share knowledge and to use cooperative work and collective work, especially in the areas of economics, which is something we're not really taught individually or collectively as a race. That's why we have struggle with using money, utilizing money, making money work for us. We typically work for money instead of making money work for us, which is another economic concept that we have to learn to master. And with working with each other cooperatively, and I suggest several different aspects of doing that in the book, I think that would be one of the many ways that we can make some impact and become better overall as a race.
Now, I know this in the book, you capitalize black. And as I'm saying it, I got my black power fist in the air. Everywhere you put black at, you capitalize black. I'm like, man, he said a black door. The black door is capitalized. Yes, yes, I'm with it. I'm with it, bro. I drive a black car, so you know I'm with it. So you know. I mean, what is the reason for you capitalizing black?
Hey, you know what? DAZ, I can tell you read the book because most people would not pick up on that if you didn't read the book. But you know, I have a note in the beginning, right before chapter one starts, tells you exactly why I did that, and I made a specific point throughout the book to capitalize the word black, especially when dealing with black people and the black race. That's why I capitalized black intentionally throughout the book, and I did so because far too often in this society, the word black, the term black, is minimized,
right,
on purpose by white society to sort of diminish and not take not take a positive impact on the black race or black accomplishment, and so typically I did that as a deliberate reason to make the word black stand out and show that it should be magnified and not minimized, because the black race is worthy of all the accomplishments and all the successes and all the things that you know, white society has tried to hide. And conversely, every time I mention the word white in reference to the white race and white people, I used a lowercase version and I didn't capitalize. So all that was done on purpose throughout the book for that
now
reason.
You know,
and that's a very good point.
You know what? In my comic book that I wrote, Shay Diamond, the her powers is distributed by the color of her eye changes every day after she gets like 4 hours of sleep every day. So I put it where she's at her weakest when her eyes are clear white, and she's at her strongest when they're black. I didn't do it for the fact of the way you wrote the book, but I did it because colors come from outer space, from the heavens, like the rainbow and everything else. And most of space is black.
It is. No light.
That's the reason why I had her powers. When her eyes are black, she's at her strongest and nobody can beat her.
That's cool.
Yeah, but that was another thing, the way I interpreted yours. I was like, man, it's just like me, you know, kind of in a different way, a roundabout way,
Right.
I'm going to read. What did you say?
There's a little sinister, you know, there's a little sinister trickery in that black and white thing, man, because Noah Webster, who categorized all the words and who's famous for the dictionary that we normally use today,
even the Merriam-Webster version is created from the Noah Webster version. He takes two words like black and white, and you read them, and you think, well, black is dark, sinister, evil, and
right.
no good, and white is pure, clean, you know, pristine, great, you know, right.
Yeah.
And that's done intentionally, man. I mean, just because somebody told us this is what these words mean, and they did that, you know, as another form of control, racial control over the races, to minimize black and to magnify white. So.
And so that's why women, when they get married, they wear white to be pure.
That's right.
But hey,
right,
I told one girl you need to wear black. I know you're a hoe, but you need to wear black for real. You need to wear black.
Boy, you yeah, that's a whole nother issue right there. You're right.
Let me read something from the book. Every time I read something from the book, I'll ask you a question that actually what it meant. You kind of touched on this before, but I'm going to hit it. The black race is at war, not in the physical sense, but more in the intellectual sense. And this is a war for our very survival. We must change our philosophy towards such things as education, economics, and politics immediately if this is a war that we want, that we are to win. Explain the war that we're in. A lot of people don't even know.
Yeah, you're not lying, man. Intellectual warfare is really something that, you know, we really should start to focus on. Like I said, those three key components, I really feel strongly that if the black race could deal with those three issues, education, economics, politics, and I'm going to go ahead and throw the black family in there too, but it all incorporates the black family. But if it deals with those three issues and put them to the forefront, I think many of the problems that we face as a race in this country and around the world, we wouldn't have to deal with. If we understood economics and how money works and how we could utilize money to empower us, if we understood how important education was, if we put it first like Asian Americans do, you know, it's
right.
not that Asian people are
right.
smarter. People automatically think Asian people are smarter than everybody else. Asian people aren't smarter than any other race, but Asian people know the power of education, and they put education first. They instill education in their children from the time that they're almost born, from the time they can learn to read and write, even before that, because they have
right.
understood that once you get education and you acquire the knowledge, nobody can take it away from you, and you can use that knowledge to empower not only yourself individually, but collectively as a race. And that's the thing black people have got to come to understand. It's a collective effort. We've been so divided since slavery, when they used to pit the light slave against the dark slave, the man against the woman, the young against the old, the free slave against the enslaved slave. And they did that to divide us up, to make us weaker. We have to recondition ourselves to come back to the knowledge that collectively we're whole, we're stronger. And black Americans are the only ones really that don't really understand that. You can get black Africans from Kenya, Nigeria, Caribbean islands. They understand collectively that when they band together, they can accomplish more than they could if they were individual. And that's why you see them come over to our country or any other country and set up shop and create businesses and expand themselves, because they understand the power of collective work. So that is very important, and it's a concept that we need to grasp onto if we are ever going to be at any level of success as a race. And that's coming together and understanding those three concepts. And I think many of our problems will be minimized. There'll still be work to do, but majority of the work concentrating in those three areas, politics, economics, and education, will tremendously prepare the black race in America forward.
Right. Now, you also wrote 72% of black families are headed by single parents. I wanted to know, in your view, why is that? Why, I mean, what is the main problem? I can guess a few problems because I've been around people that's single parents. But what is a couple of the problems why only single parent households for black families?
Well, it goes back to the destruction of the black family. You can go back to 1960s because prior to 1960 in America, the black race was really a cohesive unit. As a matter of fact, there was a point in the 1950s where it were more black people married almost than there were white people married, or almost equal to the amount of white people married, which is really something considering we only made up probably about 12% of the population. But the majority of us was married. The majority of us had fathers in the household. And in the book, I tell you that in the 1960s is when America began to become mechanized. The mechanization began. So all those jobs that the black men held, they were starting to be done away with technology. So the only jobs that were left were service jobs. You know, jobs where, you know, black men had to take in order to survive. And what happened is it started to deteriorate the family, and you saw black men going different places to try to find work, leaving home, leaving families. And of course, became Lyndon Johnson started his Great Society programs in the 1960s and made the black family dependent on social welfare, and they catered to the black woman specifically. Because if you remember back in the day, if you were on welfare, you couldn't have able-bodied black male in the home. If you did, they wouldn't let you have the benefit.
Right.
You know, it was only for women with single children, single moms with children, who they would give the benefits to. So that continued to create that schism, that divide between the black male and the black female. And it began to erode and deteriorate black families to the point that in the 1970s, for the first time, you started seeing the large amount of black homes being led by single parents, specifically single black females, which is about 68% now of all the homes in America are headed by single black females. And that was the beginning of how that came to be.
Now, don't you think that back then, back in the days, we were more oriented, a lot more values was taught in the home on respecting women back then. I'm just saying, men and women alike. And the welfare system, even though we got black people on it, there's more white people using that than us.
Yep.
Am I correct?
It sure is. You are definitely.
I'm just throwing it off the top of my head, man. I think.
Well, that's in the book. It's in there. All of that is in chapter two as well. It's actually almost equal amount of black people and white people on welfare, but there's definitely more white people receiving SNAP.
Because of the population.
Supplemental nutrition, yes. Yes. But see, right, in comparison to the population, it's way more white folks, because they make up 68% of the population.
Yeah.
We only make up 13-14% of America. They make up 68%. So, yes, by and large, there's way more of them receiving welfare, and it's way, you know, there's way more of them on food stamps, the SNAP program as well. You know, you have these Republicans talking about welfare recipients like, you know, it's bad, and it's, you know, to be on welfare food stamps, and black people receiving food stamps. They called Obama the food stamp president, but more white people get food stamp benefits than any other racial group in this country. Actually.
But when they advertise it on the news, we the poster child. They got somebody black on them.
Right.
I'd be like, come on.
That's all that myth, man. That all plays into that myth of, you know. But we do lead the nation in poverty. So, you know, that's another problem. That's another problem that, you know, that has to be dealt with. But like I said, once we start to implement some of these plans and ideas and solutions that I have, including the nonprofit organization, assistance from the nonprofit organization, we can begin to erode decades of problems that Black America has faced, and you know, start to deal with some of these issues one on one. Got to have a plan. That's the key.
Now, black teenage pregnancy, because mm-hmm. when I read this, I was like to myself, I was in a social problems class in college before I even joined the Army. I was in 2 years college, and I was taking a social problems class from a teacher that she was my psychology teacher, because I did group therapy, and these were all electives, just trying to get gain some credits up in there, you know, night school,
right.
First year of school. I'm taking these 300 and 400 classes that, you know, higher ups were supposed to take, but that's all that was offered at nighttime, so I had to take what I had to take. So I did social problems, and I implemented what I learned in group therapy, and I did a group therapy session at my house with young teenagers, because I was black, a teenager, and one of the social problems we talked about was teenage pregnancy. And you say in the book, it's our new reality. 2012, 29.4% out of, 29.4 out of 1,000 teenagers in the U.S. ages 15 to 19. Black people, that was for the white people. That was for the whites, was 21 out of 1,000. Hispanic was 46 mm-hmm. out of 1,000, and black people mm-hmm. was 44 out of 1,000, and us and the Hispanics is running neck and neck with this black teenage pregnancy. And what do you attribute that to? I mean, the higher rates for us, it goes with that one parent in the family again.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, most of it is just educate. Yeah, you're right though. But most of it is just simply educating our youth as to, you know, as to such things as effective birth control, teen sex overall. Period. You know, just the idea of having sex. You know, but it goes back to the family, and if you have a mother that's the caretaker and the only person in the household, and she's out working all the time, how much time does she really have? You know, to properly mentor a child. Not to say that it can't be done, but when you juggling two or three hats, because you know you got to be the money maker, you got to be the disciplinarian, you got to be this and that, it becomes difficult to let things fall through the cracks. So a lot of that is unfortunately, you know, not, you know, speaking to the child, educating the child on what they could do to eliminate, you know, stuff as having sex early and promiscuity and you know underage and unmarried sex. But as bad as those numbers are, the numbers are on a decline actually, because a lot of these companies like Planned Parenthood and a lot of nonprofits are beginning to reach into the inner city areas and try to educate these young ladies, these young women, even the men too, because they play a part in it as well, about, you know,
right,
having sex early. And if you are going to have sex, have protected sex, not only for pregnancy, but, you know, HIV, which is ravaging black communities left and right. I mean, Black woman is one of the highest. Actually, she is the highest rate of newly infected cases of HIV. So it's very important that, you know, we continue to do these outreach programs and continue to reach these youths, continue to use nonprofit organizations, continue to offer avenues for these young women and men and mothers, single mothers, to utilize to help combat this problem.
Now, the way Trump and the rest of the Rethuglicans, not Republicans, Rethuglicans in office, if they vote, if they get rid of health care, the Planned Parenthood is going to be gone too, bro. So that's going to be another, that's going to be another even more increase.
It's a nightmare. I don't really think they can officially get rid of health care. I know they want to get rid of it, but really what they want really what they want is a tax cut for the rich, because that's all this healthcare thing is. It's nothing but a tax shelter and a tax credit for the rich.
What they want to do is get rid of that Medicaid so that they won't have to pay out, and that free up, $700 billion
mm-hmm.
they take it all?
Yep.
Yeah.
What do you think they're going to do with that $700 billion? That's going
to That's why they're going
to pay for their tax cut. Exactly.
There you go. And I'm just so upset about it, because it's almost like stealing from the poor right there.
Right,
and the rich
but I want
all
people to realize. Yeah, you're right, but I want people to realize that the healthcare system makes up 20% of the economy. If you try to just repeal Obamacare, this economy would go into the toilet quicker than you, because it's tied. The healthcare Obamacare is tied. The Affordable Care Act, should I say, is tied to so many parts of the economy that. Even the top doctors and healthcare insurance are telling them you can't just repeal this without something to replace it with. So if it's if parts of the law is bad, then they had 7 years to work on solutions to make, the bad parts good. And so far I haven't seen anything.
Them dudes ain't did nothing, dude. And they talk about repealing it. They talk about repealing it, but we got a 2-year stretch. So they can get it right. I'm like, if you ain't did
that's
it in
ridiculous.
7 years,
right.
What makes you think?
You
what makes me have faith that you're gonna do it in 2 years?
There you go. Don't be fooled. Right.
Yeah.
Don't be fooled.
Yeah.
They have
banana.
No plan.
It's the banana
no
in the tailpipe.
Right.
That's what it is.
It's the banana. Exactly. Because they have no plan. You had 6-7 years. Since you said you were gonna repeal, and you don't have anything to come up with as a solution to repeal and replace it with. Come on. It's ridiculous.
We're going to take
ridiculous
a break.
We know why they don't.
We're going to take a break, Mitch. I'm going to let you hear this song so I can play right into my next question, of course. But this is Tut. This is Tut. His name is T-U-T, Tut. And the Jamaican dude on here is Isaiah Rashard. The name of the song is... G30 Fizzy.
Oh, tough, I mean no doubt. True repo, make sure we took your house. We need the couch. Too late where you been and where you at. We need the fence. Main, so much the kids, not front or back, from off the fence. Main, we bump your shit like when I'm high and when the rent ain't several figures. Where your friends say what's up to the option and all the adoptions. In the field was a healer and robber the doctor. We felt the bruises and knives in the location implode. Got a little faith in me still. Right, yeah, yeah, hang with the makers, don't fall, just hang with the makers, be who you are, right, tough.
Nigga, bigger and better than all of y'all, anyone I tell them to a space like, shit, run around with the bass like, 20 inch rims when I'm in the place, absolutely, sick of the lie, second the job, I'm more conniving, riding in my G30 Fizzy, rolling up weed in my G30 Fizzy, made a lot of green in my G30 Fizzy, yeah. I'm bossed up, I just touched down, now I'm Randy Moss up, I be taking the payment, stacking the safe, can't blow all your cheddar, dog can do better, riding through the city, sitting pretty like hero hoes, I'm here, I'm home, I'm high off life, I'm high off Sprite, mixed with a little high tech, we got 20 bags, we got dime sacks, never play myself short, now it's off to the airport, another classic got niggas waiting to export, more spiritual than lyrical, but still I need my residual, absolutely, never front even with credit cards, I hold my nuts, and when I hit that wall, I run through it, till my niggas hit that mall and run through it, this is more than music. Nigga, I swear that I'ma get a rally in the house just like Uncle Willie. Get my shitty ass bucket to the curb when I start rolling around in the Bentley. Might pull up on my old hoes just so I can stun on the bitches. Cause we done went and did a lot of shit just so we can say that we did it. Hey, I got the bounce to make it feel like, yeah. Nappy fro got the hoes like, yeah. Share toes on my toes like, yeah. Big homie on the phone like, fuck all them niggas, man, just be true to yourself. That's what you made for, that's what you pray for. Nigga, everybody gotta hustle for something. Work for the come up, influence the culture. Dog, I'm a leader. This is shit that we used to talk about in my G30 Fizzy. Got about an ounce in the digit scale in the RZA.
Tuffy off the easy four seasons. Moving on up like Georgia Weezy.
Y'all so sleep, nigga, wake up. Young gas nigga about to fuck the game up. So impressed, so invested, shit ain't been the same since. And mama fresh prince. It's funny how we switched the game up. Took niggas to church like a church bus. Fuck the bullshit, this was real rap. Preacher son a year old and it still slap. I might pull up on the rapper, tell him get on the shit. Boy, you a mess. Make it look so easy, do you see the finesse? Get on your job, searching for yourself inside a fake facade. My God, thank God we living it up. When the work got you down, I'll be building you up. Ain't shit to it, it's just music. Don't let fear or failure scare you.
Hey, man, if I could, I would, bro. I promise.
Hey, well, can I at least pray for you? Hey, let me get your ass.
I'ma get a rally in the house just like Uncle Willie. Get my shitty ass bucket to the curb when I start rolling round in the Bentley. Might pull up on my old hoes just so I can stun on the bitches. Cause we done went and did a lot of shit just so we can say that we did it. Hey, I got the bounce to make it feel like, yeah. Nappy fro got the hoes like, yeah. Share toes on my toes like, yeah. Big homie on the phone like, fuck all them niggas, man, just be true to yourself. That's what you made for, that's what you pray for. Nigga, everybody gotta hustle for something. Work for the come up, influence the culture. Dog, I'm a leader. Yo, yo. This is poet, author, Mark Lacy. That's M-A-R-C-L-A-C-Y. And you are listening to ATAZP recorded live right here in the ATL. Don't forget to check me out at www.marklacy.com. That's www.marclacy.com. Read about the critically acclaimed The Looking Heart, Poetic Expressions from Within, and Reflux. And don't forget to keep it locked at ATAZP recorded live.
Yo, this is TAZ with Arthur Mitch Taylor in the house. Mitch, I played that song for you because, brother, you have wrote about
it. I know where
you're going. I know you know where I'm going. Let me read it. You are well aware of some of the terms like nigga and flies. Yo, my nigga don't get no bigger. And a host of other terms of endearment and negative connotations associated with the word that we as a race have allowed to become part of our subculture instead of eliminating the words, phrases, and verbiage altogether. You heard about 8 niggas in that song, about 20 minutes.
Yep. I'm a
yeah. And I know you were going, first you were going, where TAZ find this song at? I know that's one thing. You always was amazed at the music that I be finding, man, because King Tut is a bad dude, but I like the song.
Yep.
But explain what you about the term nigga.
Well, you know, the term the N-word, you know, is something I've tried to stricken from my vocabulary a long time ago. It's just a negative word that was created from something actually positive for black people. But, you know, white society has a way of stigmatizing, categorizing races and things. And it was just a word that's created to demean us by the white race, and really, it really has no place. But what we've done is we've taken a negative and tried to turn it into a positive. We don't say nigger like, you know, they generally say. We say nigger, and it could be used as a term of endearment, like I said in the book, or it could be used as, you know, derogatory, you know. But
right,
whatever,
right.
way we've tried to spin it and make it, you know, less caustic and less, you know, and less damaging to us is still not needed in our vocabulary, in our language. Actually, and like I said in the book, it comes from the word, the Egyptian origin of the word. In ancient Egypt, they used to use prefixes like NTR, NTY, and what those things meant, it actually meant that they were referring to the gods, and, you know, and the kings and the queens, and even ordinary citizens, you know, because you came from godliness, and that was a way of showing, you know, your respect to, you know, your heritage and the gods that you came from. But what happened is, you know, the invasion of Egypt and Africa and, you know, the Roman Empire, and which was one of the first ones to come in and start changing words around, they took the prefixes and started adding their own suffixes to them, like
right.
I-G-G-E-R, and making those positive words that they found in the language negative. And that's where the word nigga really derived from.
Right.
Them trying to change the culture and change the language, actually change the language to change the culture, to demean and devalue black people and where they came from. See, they know more about our history, unfortunately, than we do, and where we came from and how great the black race was. So that was their goal, to demean, demise, devalue black people. And that's how they put those words like nigger and other ones on black people. And that's
right.
Why we need to understand the history of the word, where it came from, what it really meant, because we really refer to each other like we should. That word, at least the derivative of that word, was meant God. They just added the suffixes to make it negative, to create a totally different word or totally different meaning. So, no, we really don't need it because it has no purpose. And rappers, like I said in the book, they should really follow suit because they're the ones, you know, but you're going to use your own experiences. I understand that when you rap, you're going to draw from your own experiences and the things that you see in front of you. But I wish more people would really research and understand the meaning of where the word came from and why they created it, and they would understand why we no longer need it. Or if we're going to refer to each other like the kings and queens that we are, where we came from, then use the Egyptian origin of the word, because it does mean God, it does mean king, and that's just the more trickery. But like I said in the book, we should just need to eradicate the white version that was created to demean us and not even
right.
give any more credence or credibility to the stigmatism and the word that was created to just keep you in check, keep you in place.
And the word that you wrote in there was not capitalized. That was not black. It was in the lowercase. Black on. Hey, I'm a rapper and I do my own music, and you know, Mitch. I'm sorry, Mitch, but I use the word every now and then.
Yeah.
Now, not like that cat. I don't say it about 20
right.
times in a song. I might say it once or twice.
The hope is for us to get better. That's why we're discussing it. You know what I mean? That's
right.
What we need to do, you know, because we got some ways to go. But I think we can get there.
Black on black crime. Do you think the music has something to do with that, or is just we trying to somebody see somebody and they jealous and I gotta get that.
Man,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. You're right. It's so much involved in that black on black crime thing. It's just, I mean, you look at it in one respect, you like, you know, you say, well, you don't want to do the enemy's work for them. You know, why can't we come together? Why can't we work together? But then you gotta look at all the social problems that you gotta deal with, you know, from unemployment to joblessness, to poverty, to communities that you know are really falling apart. That really is really not communities, because we really have in the black so-called community, you have very little communities. What you have is neighborhoods. You know, neighborhoods is where people come and eat and sleep And that's all. I mean, communities where people collectively work together to become viable, you know, to spread knowledge and to understanding and you know, collective work and cooperation. That's a community, you know.
Right.
And I'm borrowing this from Dr. Claude Anderson. If you never read any of his books, like, you know, Powernomics and Black Wealth, White Wealth, you should really check it out. But you know, he specifically talked about the fact that a lot of Black communities, you know, so-called Black communities, are nothing more than neighborhoods, because, you know, neighborhoods are just the place where you sleep and eat, and there's nothing collective going on to better the area. So the Black-on-Black crime kind of manifests itself, and it has to do with, you know, a lot of gangland activity, because you got to understand, when there's a niche to be filled and, you know, you don't have job creation and job, you know, opportunities and wealth being created, something's going to fill the niche. And, you know, you get a lot of gangland activity that kind of fills the niche for these youth, particularly the young people. And, you know, because you got to survive. I mean, nobody is going to sit there and let themselves just starve and not, because it's human nature is to survive. So you're going to survive in any means that you can find that's in your immediate environment. So, you know, gangland activity plays a big role in Black-on-Black crime. And, you know, most of the activity that you get from Black-on-Black crime, which you won't hear this talked about in the news or anywhere, is gang related. You know, it's Black people really not just going in down in the streets killing and shooting each other. That's not how it's happening. It's a lot of gang activity that's involved in that. And that gets caught up in the fact that Black people are violent and Black people, you know, killing each other, but it's not happening to the extent that they think it is. You know, it's, most of that is crime related, and it's related to gangs. It's just like you see what's going on in Chicago. That's
yeah,
a lot of
wartime.
And the way to clean that up is to offer more opportunities for people so that they're not impacted by situations like these. But see, one thing, another thing that's never talked about is white-on-white crime.
Oh, yeah, it's about even.
I ain't going to steal your thunder,
even.
Right. Go ahead. Because it is equal. Because Black people die at the hands of other Black people almost as much as white people at the hands of other white people. As a matter of fact, if you put it in relation to the population, like we said before, we only make up 14%. They make up 68%. Then white people are dying way more often at the hands of white people than Black people are dying at the hands of Black people. So, but people don't hear that in the news. But if you go to the Department of Justice, the statistics are there, and white people commit more violent crimes, they commit more homicides, they commit more forcible rapes. It's 2-1. It's not even close. So you got to understand that white-on-white crime is a huge problem. But white people are killing white people. It ain't Black people that's killing white people. White people kill white people more than any other racial group. So, you know, you can't spin it. You can't spin it and say, oh, y'all killing each other. And y'all killing each other, too. But, you know, the problem with us is we have to work on our own aspects. And do some of the things that I just mentioned to combat the problem. You know what I mean? And that's where the problem lies. With white on white crime, black on black crime is just as real as white on white crime.
Now, one of the subjects in your book, Big Business, Big Pimping, and I wanted to get this information out to you to see what you think about this, because this is something new they're getting ready to develop in the NCAA. Is HBCUs pay for play basketball league? Have you heard about it?
I have not heard about that.
Okay, it says I'm going to give you the steps. It's developed by this dude named Andy Swartz. He has a business plan to make it happen. And from HBCU exclusive basketball league, step two: tell the NCAA to pound sand and pay the nation's very best high school and college players to be part of it. Step three, profit. Oh, and also change the face of big-time campus athletics forever. They said, Andy says one of the ways to bust up a monopoly is through disruption. And that's the idea that they're trying to promote. They would pay for play between 50 G's and 100 G's a year. Dude.
I love it.
You know what? If I was in school, and they would talk about doing that, I'd be like, I'm at Kansas. I'd be like, look, nigga, I'm playing in this league, and I'm using that word too. I'm playing in this league over here because they paying 50 G's or 100 G's a year.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Right. Man,
yeah, so,
listen, man.
Big business, big
business. We already know, right? Big 50. Big, hey, what I call the NCAA, what do I call the NCAA? The National Conspiracy Against African Americans. That's what I call the NCAA.
That's a good one.
Because that's what it is. Look, all the money the NCAA makes, the billions and billions and billions of dollars they make, come from two sports in particular, basketball and football. Predominantly black athletes. No, not even close. I think it's like 60-something percent, 64%, 68% of football, and basketball is closer to 80%, 77. I don't got the numbers in front of me right now, but it is that high. So the majority of the athletes are black. The majority of the athletes are bringing all the money to these schools are black, and they receive nothing. $100,000 scholarship maybe for 4 years if you stay 4 years. And most of them don't stay 4 years. Most of you, if you look at the retention rate, the black male athlete in college only graduates at 33%. So you're not saying that they're giving them an opportunity to even get an education that they can use, a college education they can take out of college and utilize it somewhere else and make money. All they're doing is coming in there to pay, to play, to make the university money, to use their name and likenesses. Name and likeness on video games, on shirts, on jersey sales, everything. I mean, I can go on and on and on how much money these schools make off these athletes, and nothing goes back to them. And you're talking about a 4-year scholarship, and most of them never get to the 4 years, so they don't even get the $100,000, $150,000. It's probably less than that. It's probably half of that.
And a lot of times, them guys are working at Crystals, Burger Chef.
Right.
Trying to wash their clothes and make ends meet,
right. And
they still
with the
booster
program, it still ain't no money, right? It still ain't no money like the school is making. You know what they make off these bowl games? I mean, millions of dollars off of one bowl game. Just the bowl game alone, not to mention all the games throughout the season. And it's ridiculous. And it's time. And that what you just read is perfect. I think that's a great start. I think that's just the beginning of it. I think eventually you got to get to the point where you're paying an athlete a stipend or a salary to come and play because, you know, why not? I mean, it can't be just the promise to come, you know, from your urban area and come and get a better opportunity over here at USC or some of these other colleges that are really bad, that the graduation rates are real low, like the University of Kentucky and some of the other ones where they don't graduate, they're below the 33%. So yeah, man, it's really a problem that really had to be talked about because it's nothing but modern slavery. It ain't nothing but another form of modern day slavery anyway.
With that kind of program, that would make kids want to stay in school longer.
Definitely.
I mean, you know, I know I might make $10 million, $12 million,
right.
You know,
right.
the best ones, the good ones will go, but the mediocre players that still could have got paid.
Don't. They never get
they
there,
might,
right?
They might stay.
Less than 2%. Right.
Yeah, because I'm having
and
fun.
And they don't make, they, you know,
school.
They never get to the, right. They never get to that, most of the athletes that play will never get to that professional level anyway, because it's less than 2% to actually make it to the NBA and the NFL anyway. So now you really being brought from your area, from your urban area, your community to come to your university to play. And then after it's over with, somebody should do a story about what happens to these athletes after they leave college. Because I'm telling you, man,
a lot of them that's kind of good, they go overseas and play. Because I knew a few of them
that
used to go to run and shoot and play ball.
Yep.
And they were over in Germany and over in China playing ball. So. Mitch, I'm looking at the clock. I want you to give your information out so people can get the book. The name of the book again is What's Up, A Definite Guide to Surviving Life in Black America. I want you to tell the people where they can hit you up and get the book, man.
Yes, sir. Yep, you can go to any major bookseller. It's going to be on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You can walk into a Barnes & Noble. You can go to BarnesandNoble.com. You can go to BooksAMillion.com. Anywhere you can buy and sell books at, you'll find it there. If not, you can or have them ordered for you. You can go to the website, www.paradigm, P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, publishing, CO for company, .com. And you can get access for a discount of $15 on the website. It's $20.1995 in the store doing a book signing in Savannah on the 28th. If anybody's in the Savannah area, at the Oglethorpe Mall, Barnes & Noble from 7 to 9 on July the 28th. And I'm coming to Texas, Louisville, Texas. And
yeah, let me know, bro.
I think it's out. It might be close to Grand Perry. It might be close to where you are, actually. I will let you know, though, but you can go on the website and you can get all the information to where the book signings are, and you can also go to the What's Up Facebook page where I have all the stuff posted. Usually daily topics to talk about and all of the book signings is coming up. So if you're getting out there doing a book signing tour, I hope to see everybody out there so we can discuss the book more in depth.
Yeah, man, I tried to hit a few spots.
I know, man,
so many more questions. This book is long, bro. Like I said, this should be a college course.
Right, I'm serious. There's a lot to cover, man.
You know what? You know what? You need to submit it in for a college course. I don't know, bro.
You're right.
That would be ugly. Yeah, that would be
you're
ugly.
Right.
Could you imagine
it'll
people buying your book? Yeah.
You're right. I like that.
Yeah, I think,
like the idea, T.A.Z.
I think so, bro. You need to submit it for a college book because I was thinking, boy, I'm writing a lot of notes.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying
exactly.
to myself as I was reading it. I'm writing a lot of notes. A lot of it I knew already, but I didn't know.
Right.
There was a lot of points that I was like, yeah, I understand that. That's why this is,
right.
you know, that's why it's like that because of this.
Yeah.
So I'm thanking you, sir, for coming through, man. The dude
love
that you heard on the intro, the little pimp. I know you know who that was.
Mhm.
Yeah, I know you was like back in your mind, like not K. Tickle.
Yes, sir.
Boy,
I like that.
Yeah, man, I took different cuts of the show at that time.
Yeah,
I'm 278 shows into this, so
wow.
And I probably done over on my website. I probably done maybe 200 hours over there, so it's
that's
crazy.
Fantastic.
I've been doing this a while,
fantastic.
and meeting all kind of different people, man. One day you need to come in and co-host so you can meet a couple of artists that flow through. And you'll be
anytime
like, wow.
you want me to do it, bro. You know you got the number, man. Let me know. I'm definitely down to help you out however I can. I appreciate the opportunity.
Man.
And
that's
you're doing
good,
it, man.
Bro.
Keep
I'm
doing
trying
it.
To, man.
Keep doing it. That's what we need.
I'm trying to. This is
keep doing it, please.
I'll be back next week. I got two artists in next week, plus my cousin. She gonna co-host. She just went to London. Her husband's in the Air Force, so she'll be calling in from London, co-hosting with me. I got two artists coming through. This is a white artist by the name of On the Fence. This is one of my favorite songs. The name of the song is called Lotto, but this is On the Fence. Until next week, thank you, Mitch Taylor, for coming through.
Appreciate you, brother. You have a good one.
You too.
On the Fence, prod you. You know I want you to feel alright. I wanna grind with you. Show me what you like. I just wanna see all the movement. We can dance all night. I just wanna see all the motion. I just wanna see your emotion, Jay. How many kittens can you get on a day? Yeah, wait. I'm still thinking if I should have, depending on the way. Yeah, feeling all dizzy, way.
I see you do your thing, right? We can smoke up and a play, yeah, yeah. How why do you wanna get with me, yeah, 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 yeah. You cannot hide the feeling when you've been running. Baby, slow it down, show me all the shapes that you've been making. Now I'd rather see you in some panties than I just see you naked. It never changed, always be that way, I'm not mistaken. Purple plenty of bills, what I've been thinking lately. 15, 26, made it. You know I want you to feel alright. I wanna grind with you, show me what you like. I just wanna see your movement, we can dance all night. I just wanna see your emotion, I just wanna see your emotion. We can be friends and so much more now. Fucking all around till my mind is sore now. You know that I like it, I cannot explain. Feeling that you're having with me ain't the same. Feeling all good when you're taking your steps with me. Calling you at 5 a.m., let's see. You keep pretending you're sleeping, I know what's up. I just think I want that lotto. You that 60-inch girl that I want though. I'm just feeling lucky just so you.